Hello, everyone. Welcome to Vision and Voices. My name is James Nguyen. I am your host today. And today we have a special podcast as we are going to be talking about National Recovery Month. I have Miss Glenda Dedman here with me, and she is a former business owner, but also a medical professional who worked at a large hospital emergency room here in the Baltimore area. And she's going to first talk to us about her experiences there with folks who are in recovery or may have had some trauma related to substance abuse, and then also going to give us some personal experience. So, hi, Ms. Dedman. How are you today?
Hi, James. I'm fine. Thank you very much. Good. Thank you for having me here.
Great, great. Listen, I want to tell you, I saw Ms. Dedman in the hall earlier, and she said, I don't know if I wore the right thing. She looks beautiful today, doesn't she?
Well, thank you. I found out later we're on the radio.
So they're not going to see you.
No, they're not going to see me.
I'm letting them know.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Well, I gave folks a little bit about you, former business owner, medical professional. Tell us about yourself. Go into some detail about that.
Yes, for over 20 years, I've been in the medical field. I've worked in numerous hospitals, and in the hospitals that I've worked in, you see patients coming through that may have had drug issues, but the last one was in the ER, which was the most detrimental to me because I never experienced seeing people come in with the actual drug overdose and what the outcome has been and can be when they've come in that state.
Yeah, with this being National Recovery Month, of course, working at Volunteers of America for a number of years, I've come to know a lot of people who are going through the recovery process. Mm-hmm. And from what I understand, it is definitely a process. It's not something that, you know, hey, I'm recovered, it's done.
Right.
When you met folks in the ER at that stage of recovery where maybe there was an overdose or some other trauma that had happened around substance abuse, What was their state of mind? What was that like?
Their state of mind, from my perspective, was not really clear. But then there were some who were clear, and they knew exactly what they were doing. It wasn't a point of trying to step away from reality or step away from responsibility. It was just an overall choice. This is what I chose to do. This is what I choose to do. And this is what I'm going to do. So when you're trying to help them through it, they're disappointed because they want to be in that state. But it's just so happened that sometimes the opiate causes them to overdose because the brain forgets to tell them to breathe. Then they find themselves in an emergency room and having to be Narcaned out of the situation. And then once they're out of it, then they're upset because you took away something that they looked forward to having.
So when you say they wanted to be in that state or they were looking forward to having, what were they looking forward to?
They were looking forward to that first euphoric experience. They're always seeking that, and that's what I was told, that's what they look for. And you only get that once, and then the rest are you continue to try to seek that out, and you it's not there. And right. So if you become clean and then you go back and you start again, your body doesn't know what your limit is at that point.
Got you. So when folks come to that point and they're at the ER and they're likely in one or two situations, I've heard that sometimes people might have brought them there and kind of just...
Yes, yes.
Maybe someone that they were using with or...
Right. We have plenty of those instances where a person has overdosed and they're with other people, they will get them to the hospital safely, let us get out there, take them from the car or the truck, put them in the vehicle, put them on a stretcher and bring them into the hospital, and then they're gone. They'll say, I don't know what happened. and they just leave them. So you have to find details from what you just experienced at that point. And then maybe you try to reach out and see if they're in the system because they may have been there before. And perhaps you try to locate a family member to see if there's anything that's missing or what we need to know in addition.
How dangerous is that?
That is so dangerous. When people have recovered, or from this perspective now, this year alone, most of the people are trying that heroin with fentanyl, and the fentanyl is what's taking them out.
And what's fentanyl?
Fentanyl is a opiate that is, I can't even tell you how many milligrams higher than heroin in itself. It's so much stronger than heroin that they take heroin and mix fentanyl with it. And sometimes they're
more potent,
right? But they're not really realizing that fentanyl is in it. Not everyone knows that.
Oh wow!
That has been connected. But now, because of so many instances, they are realizing that it is the fentanyl that's causing them to overdose.
Wow! So most people that are overdosing now, are they primarily using opiates, heroin, or?
Heroin.
So let's go back. You said you've been involved for 20 years. 20 years ago, did you have this type of experience? And has it been something that's been increasing over the last few years? Or has it always been, you know?
From my perspective and my understanding, I never experienced actual drug overdoses as we've encountered in the last 3 years, because like from 2014 it was a climb, an incline, and then in 2015 to now it's like an epidemic.
Spike.
Yes. It has truly spiked.
Do you know why that is? Is there something that's triggering more people that, well, you mentioned the fentanyl. Is it just that now, is that something new that people are mixing heroin with? Or are there more people using? Are there younger people using? What's causing this spike in overdose numbers?
What's ironic with a lot of people, if they hear that there's a good drug out there, it lures them to it instead of taking them away from it. And
by good drug, you mean one that makes you overdose?
Absolutely. that lets you forget who you are.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
And because of the increase in the drug, there have been a lot more younger people dying than it has been before.
So the demographic is getting younger.
Yes, it is. We had one 18-year-old a couple months ago that came in. He walked into the ER to be seen. He went into the bathroom and OD'd. And by all accounts, they did everything to stabilize the patient. But the patient, within 4 hours, his body couldn't take it. So it was over just that suddenly. I can't imagine anyone getting up in the morning believing that this is what my day is going to be like, or this is what my end is going to be.
Right.
So it's just amazing how you run to it instead of looking for a way out.
Right. Let me ask you, what can I do? It seems like just about everyone has been in contact with someone who's using or abusing a substance, whether it be alcohol or even, you know, cigarettes for that matter, right? What can a person do to help? How can you help someone who you might fear one day would overdose?
From the perspective of family members, I understand the choices that they make. However, it has to be their choice to want to come clean. We can talk to them until they're blue in the face. We can hold all types of meetings. But a person has to come to a complete understanding of, this is what I want to do for me. This is what I need to do for me. It can't be for you, Aunt Mamie, you know, Mom, Dad. It has to be their personal choice to decide to get clean.
Wow. In a few minutes, we're going to talk to a professional from Volunteers of America who works in the substance abuse field and get her perspective on just that. But when you say it's a personal choice, that really resonates with me because it really seems like I'm a former smoker, and it would just became something that where I just decided that I wasn't going to smoke anymore. And it seems relatively simple, but it's much more complicated than that.
Yes,
you know, and I could imagine when you're using an illicit drug that it's also even more complicated because, number one, you can't go to Rite Aid or wherever and just buy a pack of heroin. Yeah. You know, you have to live this life that is not, dare I say, not normal, but, you know, kind of underground.
Right. It's not productive at all.
Right, right.
Nothing about that. And for people to, they tell you it's like a job, working 8 hours or more.
Mm-hmm.
They have to get up and figure out how they're going to get the money to get the drug, the next fix. They don't like the sickness that comes behind being in withdrawal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the most frightening span of the drug use to them. I don't want to be sick.
Right.
So I can't imagine what type of sickness they go through. I can't, because I remember my sister explaining to me, she said it was like a monster in her stomach. And she said, it's like, it's just clawing and reaching and grabbing. And all you want to do is just stop this monster from clawing at you. So you have to get it what it wants in order for it to stop.
Wow.
That was how she explained it to me.
Man, that's vivid. We're going to take a break here.
Okay.
And first, let me thank you. We're with Ms. Glenda Dedman. Mm-hmm. My name is James Nguyen. You're listening to Vision and Voices. And today, we're talking about overdoses and recovery.
Absolutely.
So we're going to take a few minutes break, and we're going to come back with Ms. Valencia Donaldson of Volunteers of America, who is going to talk to us more about recovery. Thank you.
Nurse, I need you to apply pressure to the head wound until I can get to it. I'm concerned she's lost too much blood.
Oh, no.
You in the corner, who are you? You're not supposed to be here.
She's my girlfriend, doctor.
You need to wait out in the waiting room.
Please, doctor, I want to stay with her.
Look, she's been badly injured. So if you want to do what's best for her, you need to let us do our work.
Please, doctor, she has to be okay. I didn't mean to do this. I love her.
Wait a second. You were the driver?
Yes, but I didn't mean to. I swear, we went to dinner. I was just buzzed. I only had a few drinks.
Just buzzed? Why didn't you tell us that? In that case, your girlfriend is fine.
Hey, sweetie. I feel great. You want to get out of here?
I can't believe this. Really, doctor? She's really okay?
What, are you kidding? No, not really. Nurse, get me a suture kit. Stat.
Buzzed driving. Maybe we should stop acting like it's no big deal. Buzzed driving is drunk driving. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, the Ad Council, and this station.
Today in school, I learned a lot. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes me. In English, I learned that I'm disgusting. And in physics, I learned that I'm a loser.
Today in school, I learned that I'm ugly and useless. And in gym, I learned that I'm pathetic and a joke. In history, I learned that I'm trash.
Today in school, I learned that I have no friends. In English, I learned that I make people sick. And at lunch, I learned that I sit on my own because I smell. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes
me. In biology, I learned that I'm fat and stupid. And in math, I learned that I'm trash.
The only thing I didn't learn in school today...
The only thing I didn't learn today...
The only thing I didn't learn...
is why no one ever helps.
Kids witness bullying every day. They want to help, but they don't know how. Teach them how to stop bullying and be more than a bystander at stopbullying.gov. A message from the Ad Council.
It's time to party! Woo!
What a party! My head is spinning and spinning.
I do believe you set a record for margaritas.
What's your name again? Bob? Bill? I'm kidding.
Yeah, I'm Brad, the nice guy that you just met.
Hey, Brad, let's go upstairs. There's an empty room up there.
Hey, that's not a good idea.
Oh, but I want to. Wow, my head is spinning and spinning.
Too many margaritas.
Brad, we don't have to go study. We're just hooking up. I'm spinning and spinning.
Listen, we can make this happen another time after we get to know each other.
Don't be sorry later for what you can control now.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Vision and Voices. My name is James Nguyen. I am your host, and we are here today with Ms. Glenda Dedman, who you heard earlier on the show and her accounts as a medical professional working with folks who had overdosed. We are now going to hear from Ms. Valencia Donaldson, who is a program director for Volunteers of America's Substance Abuse Program at the Residential Program Center in Arlington, Virginia. How are you, Ms. Donaldson?
I'm well, thank you.
All right, before we get into it, let me tell you just a little bit about what we had been talking about. And that was, we really talking about, of course, this is National Recovery Month.
Yes.
I don't need to tell you that, working in the field. Mm-hmm. But we're talking about, with Ms. Dedman, folks who are overdosing. And the fact that there has been a spike over the last 3 years. Is that right, Ms. Dedman?
Yes, it has been.
Over the last 3 years, a spike in folks overdosing, particularly on opiates, mm-hmm. and particularly young people.
Yes.
That spike being caused in part by the introduction of fentanyl, mm-hmm. which is a drug I guess they use to make the heroin more powerful.
More potent, right. Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
But originally it was on the market for pain management.
Wow.
It was originally on the market for medical use, mm-hmm. Not for recreational use. And so I call the drug kingpins have gotten a new recipe,
okay.
in order to open up their marketplace. And so they learn how to mix drugs.
Wow.
And in the mixing, they have created this monster where everyone is experimenting with it.
Wow.
Everyone is mm-hmm. experimenting with it.
Sure. And of course, on Vision and Voices, we always like to lean toward how could we help? How can we, if we, and I'm, it's hard for me to kind of get my head around this because, you know, my thought is that, especially when it comes to young people using mm-hmm. heroin, they're hard to identify. Is
yes.
that true?
It's true. And most people say it's not going to happen to my child, not this high end, because we work on a history of heroin as a old drug and it's shooting up and it's not going to happen to my baby and it's not going to happen, you know, in my community mm-hmm. Because that was it has an urban vibe to it, have a criminal vibe to it. But now, because the marketplace is so wide open, opiate use has changed the face of a person that's actually using now.
Let me back up a little bit because mm-hmm. I want to get more of your background. You're working with Volunteers of America, but particularly at the Residential Program Center in Arlington, Virginia.
In Arlington, Virginia, where I have a detox unit mm-hmm. as well as an early recovery unit, which means it's a 90-day residential program.
Okay.
And I have over 25 years in working with substance abuse, and I have all the licensing from LPC to MAC to certification in substance abuse. I got it all because I've been in the—
Even
been
XYZ. In
XYZ, OPT. But the challenge is— I've seen it. I've seen the growth. Mm-hmm. And it's difficult to say that because I'm in the business of healing. I'm in the business of getting people on the road of recovery. But now I'm learning how expansive mm-hmm. my viewpoint has to be now in reference to who I treat.
Right.
Because the diversity of the people that I treat is wide range because I sit in Arlington. Mm-hmm. I don't get when people think about drug use, they think about the urban community. Mm-hmm. They think about the homeless. They think about somebody under the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes I get parents that drive in a 750 BMW and they little Johnny is so high.
Right.
They don't know what to do with them. And they have expanded and expensed their healing mm-hmm. to where they are just at rock bottom, that
wow.
they don't know what to do because they have been tapped. Mm-hmm. Wow. And so when I get parents of children of children coming into the facility wanting help. How do I help him? What do I need to do? And one of the things we have to do is get them clean and sober. Due to the fact that I only treat 18-year-olds, 18 and above, I have to send them to the hospital so they can get medically cleared. If they're under the age of 18, then I have to refer them to a an adolescent unit.
Gotcha.
But if they, if a parent is working with a teenager that's 18 and above and they come to me and they are on opiate use, and they have tapped out everything. We are a social model detox, which means there's no medicine assisted in this. So we are the rubber that meets the road.
Okay. I was going to say, that's important to note. So a couple of things that I find intriguing. You're in Arlington, Virginia. Arlington is one of the top 5 or 10 wealthiest counties in the United States.
It is.
And you're telling me that there's an opioid issue there.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Very much so.
And so that, and you already spoke about the diversity of the people that come to your center and that you work with. But then also, you're non-medical?
We're non-medical.
So this, now Glenda gave us a very vivid picture, right?
Yes.
About how a person who is using, actively using, but maybe wakes up in the morning and hadn't used yet. And the feeling they have, she likened it to a monster living in their stomach, scratching and clawing at them.
Right.
And then part of the reason why they continually use is to quiet that monster.
Right.
And you're saying
so when
that
they
you're
wake
non-medical.
Up, I mean non-medical.
So there's nothing to quiet the monster.
There's nothing to quiet the monster except for us, my staff, my counselors, my nurse practitioner, and my facilities manager who helps clean up. Because in the detox unit, we have 6 observation rooms. And in the observation rooms, because heroin withdrawal is a violent withdrawal. And one of the things, like the doctor was saying, that they don't want to feel the sickness. It's, they call it sickness. I don't want to feel sick. I don't want to feel sick. And in the sickness comes a ray of fountains, I call them.
What, we keep it real on this show, so let's say it's vomiting. Well,
vomiting, diarrhea, all kind of fountains just bust open, and it is my job and my staff's job to clean up and put them in the shower. We have private showers for the observation unit, so no one else can come in, only staff. In order to clean them up, because this is cold turkey. And in there, we have one-on-one sighted line of sight, which means that it's a staff that's attached to you that monitors you every 2 hours.
Wow.
And in the monitoring of every 2 hours, you have to get up. You have to walk. You have to take a shower every 2 hours. And then we, you know, ensure that we clean the room, we change your clothes, we take your vitals, and we put you back in your room. And if you can talk, if you want to sit up and talk with us, we want you to do that because someone is going to talk to you for at least 10 minutes.
Sounds like recovery is about comforting.
It is. It's about comforting and reassuring that they're going to get through it.
Yes.
That they're not alone. Most of my staff that's in is in recovery themselves and have had past heroin use, so they understand the withdrawal the withdrawal process.
Right.
Not only just in heroin, but it's also alcohol and also it's crack cocaine and K2, all of it. We have experienced it all in the detox unit and how we have to manage it. And then and each withdrawal has a different circumstance surrounding it that we have to be mindful of.
Yes.
Right.
So anything that changes to the left or the right, like temperature, the way they look, to even the way we measure their vomiting. If we start seeing certain things as like green or things like that, we know it's time to transport.
So if it changes colors.
It changes colors.
Consistency.
Right, and we on the move.
That sounds like a tough, tough job.
It is. It's not for the faint at heart.
Yeah, no. Ms. Deadman, I'm sure you working in the ER all those years, that was a tough, tough job as well.
Yes. the ones with alcohol, you have to be mindful because they have seizures a lot in their withdrawal. Mm-hmm. So that definitely has to be monitored closely.
Is this something that a person can work on at home?
It's not recommended.
It's not recommended, no, sir.
Okay.
It's not recommended. One of the things that the opiate epidemic has opened up is this, the overdose new mechanism that you get trained and you get the Narcan spray to help if you see an overdose at the house. Mm-hmm. So any citizen can actually get trained and get the privilege of having a prescription in order to administer if they know that they have some high-risk behavior within their home.
Gotcha.
But after you administer that, you have to get them to the hospital. Yes.
Call 911.
Call 911 immediately. Yes. Even though, and in the 911 call, say to them that you are administering something to help with the overdose.
You know, and it's funny because Ms. Denman spoke about folks who get dropped off at the ER.
I know.
And, you know, either pushed out the truck or, you know, the ER staff come out, grab the person, and then the next person, I don't know what happened.
Right. You know? No one ever
and
knows.
Obviously they do. Right. But they're gone.
Well, one of the things that when parents call me and their child or their loved one or their husband or their girlfriend is not ready for treatment, but they still have them in the house and they still can get to them, I ask them to get as educated as you can about your drug that person is on. And there are harm reduction methods like the Narcan. What I'm saying? Right?
Narcan.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Even my staff is trained on that. Mm-hmm. Get trained on it because that's a new movement out there. There's a lot of trainings out there that you can receive the way you can get the prescription.
Okay.
At home.
So that's something that you can do to help.
That's something you could do to help because everybody's not ready for treatment.
Right.
Everybody's not ready to go cold turkey. Everybody's not ready to do another harm reduction method to get off the drugs.
Right. And this and
some
is still
of them, and some of them just don't want to get high. They want to stay high. They don't have no, that's it's your problem that I'm getting high. So, but what's happening that we see in suburbia is that they keep them at home. Mm-hmm. And in the keeping of home, they don't have a lot of the safety measures that if that kid overdose in the house, because you done clean up all your medications out of your room, you watching where they go, but they still are getting high and they still returning home. Be mindful where your 911 number is. Mm-hmm. And be mindful of who you can contact in a minute that can help you to get your loved one back on track again.
Mm-hmm. So with National Recovery Month in mind, this is all part of that, right? This
yes.
is part of the process.
Yes.
Even though folks are still actively using, that still is part of.
Well, it's a national awareness that we are dedicating this month to pull out all the stops on getting family members, everyone educated about this epidemic. And I'm glad that they have set aside a day, a month, and so hopefully one day it'll be a year, that they would just really push the information out about how you can save your loved one who is addicted to drugs.
Well, I want to thank you both for coming on the show.
Thank you.
We're out of time now, but if you can, give us your contact information or where folks might be able to reach you if they want to know more information.
Well, I am, I'm Valencia Donaldson, RPC Detox and Early Recovery Program, and the telephone number that you can reach us at is 703-228-0033.
All right. And
thank you. And I'm Glenda Dedman. I'm just here to share my experiences. I don't have an actual contact number for you, but you can reach out at any 911 number and they'll let you know anything you need to know. Thank you.
Thank you for that. And this is James Wynn. You have been listening to Vision and Voices, and we thank you. We are on HCC Dragon Digital Radio, and we're coming to you every Thursday and Sunday afternoon. Thank you for listening.